Welcome to the Upshot subscriber only bonus segment this week. Thank you so much for being a subscriber. Charlie Eisenhood alongside Jamie Thomas. And we're going to be talking a little fantasy disc golf. Jamie, you brought it up on the main show. You want to lay the groundwork here for what we're going to do.
Yeah, so you guys will remember a couple weeks back we talked about fantasy disc golf and how I guess my biggest problem with it is it feels too results oriented and doesn't feel enough individual player contribution oriented. And I think that's the general consensus, at least among a lot of the emails we got. So some of y'all have been great and sent us either the things that you already use on your little on the side fantasy disc golf leagues or things you'd love to see them doing. So we're going to talk about this, and I'm going to pitch it to Charlie to see if we can move the needle for him a little bit. Because I already play fantasy sports. It's a little bit easier to convince me. So I thought it would be a better test case to work it out on Charlie.
I'm excited to hear the options and let you know my thoughts.
All right. So we'll start simplest email to the more complicated emails and see how you react to that. So the first one's from Trent. Trent says that he doesn't think there's any way to make a fun season-long fantasy disc golf league. He thinks a tournament-based value pick'em would be pretty easy and really fun. Similar to one-week fantasy, each player has a preset value. Great players are more expensive, and on down the list. FanDuel or DraftKings, if anybody's ever used those. So Trent suggests a six-player roster, which sounds a lot like the Grip Six Pick Six. So we're starting with something that's kind of in that wheelhouse already. He says you have to pick an MVP player, not the disc sponsor, but the most valuable player on your team. And you get a 1.5 multiplier on their points. So essentially, Charlie, this idea is taking the Grip Six Pick Six. You have daily fantasy value price cost, right? Same way, better players are more expensive. You have to make a lineup, and then you would get to pick certain players to have multipliers on.
Okay.
How does that hit you?
This is too simplistic for my taste. I'm totally into the general idea of like making picks before a tournament. We do it all the time on the show. But that to me is not fantasy. That's just picks. Like I want to have a little bit more at stake. I want to be able to think a little bit more about what's going on. This falls more in line with like a kind of like a daily fantasy sports type deal where, you know, you have an event based thing and you pick with a salary cap with, you know, better players costing more money. And then, you know, the best lineups win cash. I think there's an appeal to that, but that's not necessarily what I'm looking for out of a fantasy experience.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you agree or not with Trent's idea that daily fantasy or tournament, like single event tournament fantasy competition is more attractive than season-long fantasy? What are you more into?
I think I like the idea of season long a little bit more, although there are things that are a problem about that, like non-standardized schedules. So if, you know, the players you choose don't all play all of the events, which is very common, then how do you deal with that? I mean, I think the answer is to have a deep enough bench that you can slot people in and out of the lineup on any individual week, in order to make up for the fact that some players won't compete at every event. But I think my initial lean, at least at first, is to do a season-long type situation, because I think it makes it more fun to think about like what is the value of a player over the course of the year rather than just like who can bomb at Memorial.
Okay. It's a good thought and a good way into Josh's idea here. So here's our second idea I'm going to throw at you. Josh says we're going to do a draft, which I'm in my mind, he didn't specify, but in my mind that comes up more like a fantasy football draft. You start before the season. You each get to pick 15 players to be on your team, and you take turns picking. From that point, there are 7 scoring categories, okay? First two, your top MPO and FPO finish. Next two are putting, circle 1 and circle 2. Next will be scramble percentage, then driving percentage, and then he said either parked percentage or you could also do most birdies. So for each category, you have to pick one player that is on your roster. You can't double up, and there must be at least 2 FPO players each week or each tournament on your roster. So then it's a head-to-head game against your opponent for the week. The only thing that matters is whose player scores are better for that individual category. So for example, if you pick Macbeth, as a top MPO finisher, and I pick Ricky, if Macbeth places higher in that category, then you win. So it doesn't actually matter if they win or not. It just matters relative to your opponent.
It's a head-to-head. Better. Right. It's not like a roto.
Mm-hmm.
To use a baseball fantasy term. Okay, this is sounding pretty good because as I talked about last time, I think one of the key things about fantasy is having the ability to win in various ways. You don't just have to be the best player because it's kind of dull. If you're doing a pick 6 kind of thing, for example, you're just going to pick the same 6 players pretty much every week. I mean, maybe you switch out 1 or 2 people, but you're going to pick Paige Pierce and Paul Macbeth and Ricky and Eagle. And, you get my point. Like, you're just going to pick the best players over and over and over. But with this style, now I'm thinking about, okay, well, who are the best putters on tour? I'm going to do some research. Who actually hits the fairway the most? I'm going to do some research. There's value with players further down who don't necessarily win tournaments, but that are going to have the ability to win you points in various categories. And I think that is far more interesting and allows for things like trades to happen during the season. And I think it's just an overall more fun experience that way because you get to know players a little bit better. You can actually, it feels less random than just picking on an individual week-to-week basis. And I think I like that a lot more because it means that, while some picks are still obvious, Paul Macbeth's probably going to go number 1 overall, you still have then the ability in rounds 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 to make smart picks and get value where others may not see it because you put in the work. And I like that.
Yeah, one thing that Josh really highlighted from this is that you have to, he says the advantage here is you have to match the player with the course. So if, he said, for example, on a tournament with bad weather, circle 2 putting, it might be risky who you slot in. And it's important to note that you don't get to pick after the fact. You have to say, I'm going with Ricky Wysocki as my C2 putting player. So if it's a bad weather tournament, it may be really risky if that person could be more valuable in a different slot on your team if you put them in the wrong place. So I like that there's some operator error, right? It's like you're saying, it's not just press the button and see what combination comes up, like try to match the combo. There's opportunity for you to make good calls and bad calls and have some agency in your picks, which is great. One more note on this, Charlie. Josh has this sort of like match play where you win the category, you get a point. 4 out of 7 category wins your match. Do you like that style, or would you like a more comparative, like let's say you put every stat on a scale, and if your scramble percentage points are higher than somebody else's driving and circle 2 putting, you're playing stroke play, you could still get the win?
No, I kind of like the category by category because it's like an easy to digest, simple solution. I think that you have to find the balance between too simple, which is just like make 3 picks, and too complex, which is like carve up all of these various points in these various ways, and birdies are worth this and pars are worth that. And, you know, it can get very complicated. And the thing is, ultimately, any system will work if there's a good tech platform behind the fantasy. So if you're just doing fantasy with your friends, it's probably easier to just make picks. But if somebody develops a fantasy platform, cough, you just cough, then you can start to do more complex things or have multiple options for people to play. And I think that is really appealing. But I in this specific circumstance, I like the category scoring.
Keep it simple where it needs to be.
Bingo.
All right. Let's move away from simple. Our last option here comes from Matt Winter. And he has a scoring system that he came up with. He says he modified it based on FanDuel's scoring that they use for PGA events.
Okay. See, now I like this. I like this already because it's using something that already works somewhere else. But continue.
Yeah. So follow along with me here. This might be a little tough. I'll try to do it well on audio. It's much easier to look at. He sent a great spreadsheet. Maybe we can post it somewhere. This is a lot more traditional looking from my perspective as a fantasy football player. You are getting points for the stats that your players put on the board. So, for example, a category is called scoring plays. You have ace, albatross, eagle, birdie, par, bogey, double bogey, triple bogey, or worse. Okay. If you get an ace, if a player gets an ace that's in your lineup, you get 15 points. Albatross, 10 points. Eagle, 7. Birdie, 3.10. So, He didn't show the work here for the math behind that, but there's clearly some math going on because it's not even points. A par gets you 0.05 points, a nickel on your dollar. If you bogey, you lose a point. If you double bogey, you lose 3 points. If you triple or worse, you're losing 5 points. Okay? Placement. The next category will be placement at the end of the tournament. If you get first overall, 15. Second, 13. Third overall, 11 points. 9 for fourth, 7 for fifth, on down to you get a point for finishing in the top 15, and it doesn't scale really until you get to the top 10. Final category, bonuses. All right. You with me so far? It's a lot of stats.
I'm with you.
All right. Streak. If you get 2 holes in a row under par, you get 0.06 points and 0.02 additional points for every hole the streak continues.
Okay.
And that's addition.
So you can like get points for getting on fire. All right.
Yes. The longer you're on fire, the more bonus points you get. It's kind of like compounding interest,
yep,
basically, because you still get the points for the score on the hole.
Right.
You have a bounce back. A bounce back is when you're under par on a hole following an over par hole, and you get 3 cents on your dollar, 0.03 points here. 5+ birdies, 5 or more birdies in a round, 5 points. Clean sheet, no bogeys, 4 points. You make a circle 2-putt, get another nickel on your dollar, 5/10 of a point. Throw it in from the fairway, which he says outside of circle 2 is 3 points. And finally, if you miss a circle 1 point, you got to give that nickel back.
That's
negative 0.05 points.
Brutal.
So, a lot of math going on, but you can see how it's a little more traditional if you're into fantasy football.
Here's my problem with this. All right. My problem with this is that I have no way of digesting all of that information in a way that allows me to assess the value of a player. So what I mean by that is I can take a player from last year and look at their stats. And in the previous system, I can say, this player finished top 10 in circle 2 putting on tour. I can expect them, most likely, to be around that same number again. Now, you have to project somewhat whether people are going to be getting better or worse or how many events they're going to play and that kind of thing, but you have a pretty good sense of the value that they're going to give you. I think it's very difficult without a historic system enabled the ability to look back on players and what their value was over the course of the season and at previous events with this more complicated scoring system to understand how the heck you value players. Because, what, like, okay, I mean, obviously better players are probably worth more points, but to what extent? And I think it gets a lot more tricky to make your later round picks when you don't really have a good feel for where you're likely to get value. And so while I understand that it's cool to be able to get stats, I think it's really cool to be able to root for things to happen. Like, oh, I really need them to hit a birdie right now because a birdie means I get 3 points and 3.1 points or whatever it was, and I will win my matchup this week. That is cool. But I think that overall, it just makes it like really hard to do your drafting.
Here's what I like about it. What I like is that it means that two players rated 1035 are not necessarily going to score the same. And I think that's the common downfall of, or the common weak link. I won't say total downfall, but the common weak link of the other systems that we talked about and the systems that are already in place, you know, with the grip six, pick six, or doing it over at Skip Ace. For the most part, it's so ratings dependent. And because ratings aren't like our power rankings, right? It's not who's doing well right this second. It's over time who does well. And because you have such a stable measurement, it doesn't allow for a lot of scoring separation.
Fair.
So what I like about this is, you know, Nate Sexton and Simon Lazat are less than one stroke difference on average across all courses all over the world. By their rating, they would score very differently in this kind of system. And it's great. I don't know about the numbers. I think you make a really good point that you would need to make sure the numbers are right and have a good balanced feel, which you can only do through getting some experience and, data through the algorithm.
I think you'd have to like back test it and like show historical scoring, like
simulate
if in fact this had been in place for the 2019 season, this is what the scores would have looked like.
Yeah. But I love that it allows me also to be a fan. Like I can pick Simon Lazat on my team and I don't have to think he's going to win or do better than everybody else in
that
most categories.
That is the key of fantasy.
Yeah. I want to be able to say, oh, that's Simon Albatross, you know, like, yeah. I want to be able to say, oh, that Mark Ingram touchdown for the Ravens, that got me 6 points, even though I hope they lose.
Like, how much was the Nico crazy throw in Albatross this past year, which, by the way, just won throw of the year. Totally deserved.
Deserving.
That would have been worth some big bucks in that game. I mean, you're talking 10 points for the Albatross. Mm-hmm. You're talking the points for the throw in. Who knows if he was on a streak at that point. But I agree. I think the key to this is that it makes it far more fun to follow individual events, no matter what system you use, because you're rooting for players who aren't necessarily the ones that are going to win the tournament. And I think, you know, if there is a downside to disc golf right now, it's that it's heavily dominated by one or two players in each division. And I think as we see the skill level rise in the sport and more people playing, that will become less of an issue. Not that I don't want to see star players play well and win. There's plenty of evidence that shows that that's what people do want to watch in sports. But I think it makes it more fun to tune into your non-majors, to your kind of middle of the season, Midwest Disc Golf Pro Tour events when you got a rooting interest in your fantasy game.
Yeah. You want to know the rough numbers? I totally agree with what you said. And I was doing the rough numbers of Nico's Albatross in case you're curious.
I'm very curious.
All right, so you get 10 points for the Albatross, right?
Sure.
He wasn't on a streak at the time. He had just parred 12. He had just double bogeyed 11.
Oof.
And bogeyed 10 before that. So he had lost some points coming into this, but he's going to get the Albatross for 10. He's going to get the fairway throw in for 3.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 13 already. He would go on to get 2 more birdies in a row. So he would start up a streak. Because it's 2 holes under par in a row. So yeah, that kicked off a small streak. So that would give him about another 1/10 of a point or so. And then what did he finish in the tournament? Just to kind of cap it all off. Nico finished tied for 2nd, of course. And so that would have given him 13 points. So he propelled himself into a pretty nice fantasy finish if this was going on during USDGC last year.
Totally. Well, I think the thing is, I think it's the stats exist, and it really just becomes a matter of developing a platform for which there can be fantasy, and it is very possible to play all kinds of different fantasy games. We could have all three of these ideas implemented within the existing stats universe that we have. And so I say, let's create it, and then people can choose the one that they like. You have the super simple, you have the slightly more complicated, and then you have the very complex. And I think that there's something for everyone.
I think the moral of the story is that there's a lot of interest in fantasy disc golf. It's just really early on. And I think you're right. The tipping point we're at is that it's going to take more time investment for somebody to not only code it all and stand it all up and have the data feeding through it, but to maintain and keep it going. It's kind of a full-time job.
Here's what we need. We need PGA / UDisc to commit to developing an API for stats that other people can then build whatever they want from a technical perspective, whether that's developing their own advanced statistics or that's developing fantasy games or whatever. If that can exist, then you start to open up way more opportunities to do cool stuff with the data that we have. And shout out to UDisc, because they've done a lot of this themselves with their UDisc Live platform and developing, just tracking these basic statistics. And it's transformed the way we watch the game, to be honest. And we're just scratching the surface. There's so much more that can be done. And honestly, I don't know how much UDisc is going to be able to work on all that themselves. I mean, we talked to Matt the last, 2 weeks ago, and they're swamped. I mean, the guys have been grinding themselves to the bone just to keep the app running for people who use the app on their phone, and that's their core business model. It should remain that way. So if they can create an API, which for those who aren't familiar is basically a way for other people to have access to the data, the raw data, in a very systematic way, then we can start to have this kind of stuff develop from people who are not trying to focus on developing a mobile application and instead want to just build a fantasy app or something like that.
And we'd be remiss in we didn't mention that Skip Ace was the first fantasy disc golf site, and John Van Derzen of Smashbox, he's the brains behind that operation. When we did our episode a couple weeks ago and started getting some asking for some insight about this, he was texting me, and he said he wasn't ready to say what was happening yet, but he said a lot of the things we kind of talked about in general in that original episode a few weeks back are either on the table or in development. So there's some behind-the-scenes stuff going on at Skip Ace. I don't know what, and maybe we'll have to have him on when they get closer to releasing so we can talk about it. But definitely UDisc and Skip Ace they're where you got to go right now. And, hopefully some good ideas will come out here and we can have like full-fledged, full-blown fantasy disc golf going on someday.
I look forward to the day.
Yeah, I'll play 100%.
I will too. I hope that we get more disc golf betting odds this year. I don't know if it's going to happen for the
Las Vegas downstairs,
challenge.
Man.
Huh?
I checked. William Hill doesn't do it yet.
Not yet. Damn.
We got Fury and Wilder. We can go make bets on that this weekend. We can bet on the way too early Super Bowl champions for next year and all kinds of stuff like that, but no disc golf yet.
Well, there were some odds up on some weird site for Worlds last year, so maybe we'll see it again this year, and we can start to talk about the odds that are getting laid down for the futures for winning tournaments. Fun stuff.
Be great.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Enjoy Vegas. Looking forward to all of your updates and reports from out there in Nevada. Enjoy being in Las Vegas as well. Always a good time.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'm going to put a bet down for you. Give me one bet. One bet that you would make in a casino, and we'll see. Maybe it'll turn into a lame story, but maybe it'll turn into a really cool story for next week.
All right, let me take a quick look at the board. What, you're in Vegas now, right?
I'm in Vegas. You can pick your game. Any game, any bet. I'm putting it on the line for Charlie. What do you want?
When does the NBA get back? They're still off for the All-Star break.
Okay, doing sports betting. I like it.
Oh, that's for me. That's you want to like just go put something on roulette for me, huh?
Anything you want. It could be sports bet if you want. I'm letting you pick, dude.
Here's what I want. I want a 49ers Super Bowl future.
You would.
What's the price?
I'll go find out.
You got to let me know the price. But assuming that it's they're going to be close to the favorites, but I think I still want it. I can't possibly put money on the San Francisco Giants to win the Major League Baseball World Series because they are going to be hot garbage this year. But the 49ers are going to be pretty good next year, and so maybe that's what I'll take.
All right. I will get back to you on some 49ers odds, and we will talk about that in the main show next week. It'll be a lot of fun.
Sounds good. Enjoy Vegas, and talk to you next week.
All right. See ya.
Thanks so much to all of our subscribers for tuning in. And make sure you come chat with us in the Slack as well. For Jamie Thomas, I'm Charlie Eisenman, saying so long. We'll talk to you next week.